Red Business with Jonathan Healy.
Hi there, and thanks very much for joining us. Going to talk about funerals and polymers. You don't hear about those two topics in the same podcast very often, but that's coming later. But we're going to begin with solar. We know the benefits of solar power in our homes and businesses, more sustainable, cheaper bills and all that. But what about the initial installation? The question is, can we afford it? Am I entitled to a grant? What are the best renewable energy products for my home and my needs? Well, EPS is a company headquartered in Mallow, and they've come up with a scheme aimed at encouraging the company's own employees to embrace renewable energy sources. Its managing director is Patrick Buckley. Patrick, how are you?
Very good. Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you on this subject.
It's lovely to talk to you. Now, what exactly are you hoping to achieve with this scheme? And I suppose, why should employees buy into it?
Yeah, well, look, we're obviously the whole concept of becoming more sustainable and reducing your carbon footprint is obviously there for a long time. Lots of companies and people have been looking at it, but I suppose in the last 2 to 3 years, it's really become very publicly aware and everybody's considering it. So we did a survey of all our employees in Ireland over 6 or 8, 10 months ago, just to test the temperature in terms of who's interested in PV, who's considering doing it, has anyone done it already? And resounding 90% plus were interested in doing it, but equally, the majority of them were not going doing it because it just wasn't affordable. Despite all of the millions of euros of grants that are available, you know, at the time, the grant was €2,600 for an EV system or for a PV system and roughly €600 for your EV charger. And even at that, it was still costing anywhere between 12 and 16,000 euros, depending on the type of system you went with, and it was just unaffordable. So what we did was we went and we said, right, how do we get this to work? Because obviously we want to try and bring as many benefits as we can for our employees and our families. Everybody's looking at what you can do to retain your talent and attract talent. And rather than salary increases all of the time or wage increases, which become unaffordable and unsustainable for most companies, we said, right, we need to do this in another way. So let's help our employees to go solar. So we set about identifying all of the various providers of products, and we said, right, we'll come up with a range of products that we can launch to sell into the Irish market and distribute and make them affordable and available to our employees.
Okay.
We partnered in initially here in Munster with North Cork Electrical, who was an established SEI approved contractor doing PV schemes, and we've made it affordable for our employees, and we've now expanded that across Ireland.
I want to delve into that in a minute, but in the words of my old friend George Hook, back up the truck. You guys are in the business of water and water systems. You do absolutely sod all, I would imagine, about solar PV. So it was an education for yourselves to begin with.
Yes, it was. But I suppose we distribute products into homes, factories, businesses all over Ireland, and we've been doing that very successfully now for over 56 years. So the extension for us in terms of growing our company is we're looking to obviously reduce our own carbon footprint, which we've been doing since 2010, and measuring it independently. And we said, okay, how do we start distributing products into the market, into our customers that we already deal with that are renewable? So we've looked at renewable pumping, renewable water treatment, and then renewable products for people's homes. And this is just an extension of that where we've launched a scheme for our employees. So okay. Like, we've a procurement team working for us in Ireland. We bring container loads of product from various markets in Asia and North America and India every week. And for us, an extra couple of containers a year of renewable products is nothing additional for our teams. You know, it's just an extra.
It's another bit of paperwork for you. But how do the teams you have benefit from it? I mean, there is a cost to all of this.
There is. So the way it works, obviously, is because the way the system is set up within Ireland at the moment, it's a VAT free scheme for the individual homeowner once they apply for their grant and they get their funding through a registered SEI contractor. So basically, we sell the equipment to a registered SEI contractor at a reduced rate, significantly reduced rate, and they sell that on installed for the employee. But the contract is between our employee and the contractor, or not with the company. So obviously all of the tax requirements are met in terms of that between the companies, but then the installer is able to give a reduced price without the significant markups that you'd normally see in other respects. And for the company, the installer, we're actually providing them with sales leads with ready to go projects. So the sales effort that they would normally deploy to attracting those customers they don't have to
well,
do.
Yeah, well, you've got,
them with leads every week.
You've got your sales base ready to rock and roll, and presumably then people are able to benefit from the cheaper prices. The other thing that you found out was that not all PV panels are the same, particularly how they're manufactured.
Yes, well, it's the equipment. So obviously in this day and age, all companies and all large clients that are utilising companies, are obviously you've got the slave labour legislation, and you have a whole host of, I suppose, requirements for companies now in particular, look, which is very topical at the moment, the Corporate Social Responsibility Directive, just CSRD. You know, you've companies looking at ESG, you've a lot of companies now looking at B Corp accreditation, which is a significant movement in particular here in Cork. And all of that is around your products, your quality, your people, the community support, but more importantly as well, your supply chain. So for any company looking at any product that's coming into the European market and in here to Ireland, you need to do your due diligence on how that product is being made, manufactured, sourced. Is it done sustainably? But most importantly, is it being done in a way where the people involved in manufacturing the product are working at their own free will? So there is a report that was issued in 2021 prepared by the University in Sheffield by Professor Laura Murphy and Alma Norola, and they basically highlighted a significant issue in China, and it's called the In Broad Daylight Report. And on the back of that, there was a UN report published in 2022. And on the back of that, the EU have eventually agreed only in March of this year to actually put legislation and regulations in place to ban products coming into the EU market that would be impacted by forced labour. So when you boil it down, the individual and a home, so a couple or a family who want to make that decision to put a solar panel in their home, or a school committee want to put it on their school, they receive their grant funding through SAI, they get a registered SAI contractor, but nobody actually goes and checks, where was that solar panel manufactured? Okay. Is it impacted by the forced labour? You know, there's over 2.6 million people have been relocated in a certain location in China, and many of the men, boys as young as 10 years of age up to whatever age are living in forced labor camps, and they're working in some factories that are making components and products that go into these panels, and I have to be very careful what I say, but lots of these products have got into the European market and are now in, they're already on roofs of houses and businesses across Ireland.
And they, and people, I suppose, look, people didn't know about it, at least the people that are buying it through your scheme, your employees, know that you've sourced them more responsibly. Just before we finish up, there is a community element to this as well. The success of your employee scheme led to a community scheme as well, did it?
Yes. So as part of the partnership with the registered installers around Ireland, we've launched with four PV installers and also two one-stop shop companies, Ashgrove Renewables and Envirobeat, both based here in Mallow in Cork, adjacent to our head office. So for people to remember, it's not just about PV. Because of the way the systems are set up, it might make more sense for certain homes or communities to look at insulation, heat pump and PV. So it's important that it's not just PV. For some people that's applicable, but for others it's not. So we're working with them holistically to ensure that we can benefit communities, we can benefit our employees. And really our employee scheme has been opened up to their neighbour, their aunt, their granny, their uncle, their sister, their brother. We don't care once people avail of the affordable PV option, and the more people that benefit from our scheme and our products, the better. And we've just widened it out now as well. And we're launching this week, any customer of EPS, so anybody who's got an EPS pump or a water softener on their house or their home, or a multi-boost product in their house, once they can show to us I've got an EPS product, we're going to open up the scheme to them as well.
Well, it's a long way from pumps you've come, Patrick, and it's brilliant to see that you're riding this environmental wave to its natural point, which is using everything within our disposal to lower our carbon footprint. The website, epswater.com, the managing director of said business is Patrick Buckley. Thanks so much for joining us, Patrick.
Thank you, Jonas.
Now, we try not to think about funerals, but you may very well be thinking about it, perhaps the funeral of a loved one. Maybe you're into planning and you're planning your own. And are you a bit unsure about what you want or how to give your loved one the meaningful goodbye that you want to? Using their expertise, Dara O'Shea and Louise O'Brien set up RIA Events, specialising in crafting and delivering meaningful funerals, memorials and celebration of life events. And there was a bit of a celebration in its own right. Dara has been honoured with the Emerging Businesswoman Award of the Year at Network Cork's Businesswoman of the Year Awards. Dara, first of all, congratulations to you on the award. I presume it means a lot.
Oh, thank you very much. It really means a huge amount. I didn't expect it. I was up against really strong finalists and I really didn't expect that it would be my name called out. But I am thrilled to bits and extremely proud of the journey, the business journey that Louise and I have been on over the last few years. We're absolutely so proud, really so proud. And particularly because this comes from a personal place for me. So to get the recognition from the judges who thought that our business was, and me, I suppose, were worth selecting as the winners, it's a huge validation and a huge pat on the back, and I couldn't be happier.
Now, anyone who's ever been involved in the planning of a funeral, it probably hasn't been planned at all. It just means that somebody passed away and you were asked to step in and to do your bit. We don't tend to plan it very well in this country, do we?
No, we tend not to. And in fact, the origin of this business comes from a similar experience. I found myself planning a family funeral in 2020, and I have a lengthy background in event management, and I was thrown into organizing everything, minding my family, involving them and taking care of them at the same time, making sure that the plans that we went with matched what they wanted. But at the same time too, I felt huge stress and pressure involved in that, because I wasn't fully aware of all of the conversations to be had, all of the jobs to do, the list of errands and tasks to follow. I wasn't fully aware of it. And in fact, Louise, who was a friend and colleague at that stage anyway, she stepped in to help me. And it was during that experience we recognised that there is a need for those who wish to have it. There is a need for additional support at the time of a funeral, whether you find yourself doing it very suddenly, or even if somebody has been has had a terminal diagnosis and the period towards death has been long and lengthy, yeah, and involved a lot of caring of that person who was dying.
Is it the case though, Dara, that people don't want to talk about it? Funerals will be grim. It's end of life. We know that. So as a result, we kind of bottle it up and don't deal with it.
Not necessarily, which has been very surprising. We have encountered some people who just do not want to go there. But then we've spoken to so many others who say, I know exactly what I want. I have it planned to a T, and are very happy to have the conversation about end of life. And I think that's very important, that for those that want it, that the conversations are available to them. They're able to start thinking about it and processing it. People are at various different stages of life, and they're dealing with, some are dealing with very sad news and very tragic news. And for those, they may be waking up in the middle of the night with thoughts of the funeral experience, you know, popping into their head. It's very varied how people are reacting to thinking about end of life. It's been quite an eye opener, if I'm honest.
But do people come to you with mad things as well? You know, I want a pink coffin and I want everyone in the front row to be dressed in a frou-frou. I mean, or is it all relatively sane?
Well, I suppose what we're here to say is that you have permission to do it your way. If you want everybody in the front row dressed in a frou-frou, and that is what you want for your funeral experience.
I'd like to clarify for my own family, I only use that as an example. It's not a request.
I jotted it down, Jonathan. I know now that's what you're looking for. People have, it's not so much that they have mad ideas. They have very personal ideas. They know what it is that they would like. They know the people that they would like to have involved. And even things like, you know, we don't even talk about the eulogy. And you find that a family member has to sit down and write a eulogy about somebody who has passed on. You're doing it at a time of huge loss, huge grief, huge shock. And you're trying to remember the things about the person who has died. Whereas that person, if you were to sit down with them 3 months earlier, would say, when it happens, don't forget to mention that I got a Munster medal in cross-country running, and don't forget this, and make sure that person is there. People have their own views and their own thoughts. We're just quite slow to articulate them and to get them into the conversation.
Tell us a little bit about the name of the business. Why did you call it Rhea?
Well, Rhea is actually the Greek goddess of ease and comfort, and that is what we would like to bring to our clients, and that is what we hope we are bringing to our clients. So it just seemed a very fitting name for us. to use for a female-led business
Okay.
in a traditional sector.
Look, it's something I suspect is going to become more of a growth industry as we move away from a more traditional funeral-based service, predominantly down to the lack of priests, and I suppose the secularization of society. I'm guessing you guys see it as a growth industry as well, because people ain't going to stop dying.
Well, we don't really look at it that way. Yes, people are, you know, there are fewer priests available. People have their own views on religion and whether they feel religious or not, whether they want it to be a predominantly religious funeral experience. But more than that, too, I think the last few years have shown us all that that it's okay to do things your way. It's okay. I mean, during COVID, we were honouring people by standing at the gate and watching as funeral processions passed by, and, you know, giving round of applauses. We found so many different ways of honouring people when we weren't able to go to the funeral itself. So I think a lot has changed. But more than that, we celebrate all of life's milestones so beautifully and so well. We can celebrate anniversaries and engagements and baby naming ceremonies and so many birthdays. But our funeral, our death, is the last really, really important life milestone. And it should be something that we take time to think about. It's one guarantee in life. It is going to happen to all of us. And I don't mean to bring the tone of the conversation down, but it is unavoidable. And it should be a cause, well, we believe it should be a cause of celebration,
okay,
of not just celebrating the life of the person who was gone, but celebrating all of those that played such a key role in that person's life,
well,
and who were loved them and were friends of them and played their part in their life experience. So we believe that people should, well, we want to help people take the time to consider what they would like for their funeral, or if they're organizing a funeral for somebody, by working with us in taking on the logistical burden and all of the jobs that need to be done. We try to create the headspace and breathing space.
It's a
really think about it.
Phenomenally good idea. The three constants in life:
thank you.
Death, taxes, and the Red Business Podcast. Dara O'Shea, the business is Rhea, and you can visit the website rhea.ie. That's rhea.ie. Congratulations again on your award, Dara, and the best of luck to you and Louise in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Finally this week, we're going to talk about a sector that I have to say, hand in heart, I've never spoken about or necessarily heard about. The polymer sector. Most of us don't know anything about it, despite it being put at the forefront of manufacturing globally. Irish polymer companies make devices for diabetes treatments, components for cars like Land Rover and Jaguar, engineering materials for cardiovascular stents, and loads of other things like clothes and toothbrushes. Catherine Collins is the network manager with Polymer First Training SkillNet, which has been working with a number of Cork companies, the likes of Boston Scientific, Ferrero, Merck, Stryker, and others. And she's with us now. Catherine, how are you?
I'm great, Jonathan. Thank you.
Bring me into the wonderful world of polymers. I didn't realise I was surrounded by so many of them.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the word polymer is kind of a mystery to people. Really, it's broken into two parts. Poly means many, mer means units. So it's essentially many units. And you'd have a lot of natural polymers that are around us every day, like starch or wool, silk, natural rubber. But then there's the synthetic polymers that we're used to, the plastics that we use in our everyday lives, like you mentioned, the clothes that we wear, the toothbrush that we use to brush our teeth this morning, mobile phones, and then all of the devices that are within our cars, in life-saving medical devices, and even in aerospace applications, just to name a few applications for polymers.
The whole point of this is that the manufacturing sector is very reliant on polymers, but you know, we haven't had a native manufacturing sector here. So are we playing a bit of catch-up?
Well, I think manufacturing has, you know, expanded significantly. I mean, the polymer sector alone would employ about 7,000 people across 230 businesses. And like you said, you gave some really good examples there of what, you know, Irish polymer companies are actually manufacturing, such as auto injector devices, like as you mentioned, for diabetes, you know, air ducts for, you know, the well-known car brands like Jaguar and Land Rover, and the stents as well. But manufacturing itself has really expanded, I think, and IBEC produced a really good report last year, which kind of highlighted the importance of manufacturing in Ireland. And manufacturing would employ 275,000 people in Ireland now. That's 11% of our total employment, which is huge. And we actually, in 2022, we exported a record 208 billion euro worth of goods. So it's really phenomenal. And I suppose we've kind of grown from the traditional maybe manufacturing like textiles, maybe to much higher value, higher technology businesses across, you know, medtech, ICT, biopharma, which is obviously, pharma is a big important sector in Cork, as is medtech, but also, you know, automotive and construction and agri-food as well. So that's really been showcased in the IBEX, you know, strategy there a couple of years ago on the polymer sector as well.
And it's really fiddly stuff we're talking about, the small but valuable items that we can export, particularly in the pharma world, for example. I remember going to one of the sites that I listed earlier and being fascinated at how big the site was to produce something that was so small and so valuable. But the one thing that became apparent, Catherine, was we need to keep upskilling people so that they can remain in step with the latest technology.
Absolutely. That's absolutely critical. And we find, particularly when the labour market is so tight, that, you know, employers are finding it challenging to attract and to retain people. So it's very much a case of networks like ours, you know, SkillNet Business Network, helping employers to develop their own people from within. So we work very closely with polymer companies over the past number of years in developing progression pathways, where you can, you know, progress from little or no experience or some experience to a very experienced technician or an engineer. So we run intensive courses here in our training centre in Athlone, which is a unique facility. But we also go on site into companies and deliver training on their own machinery as well. So it's very much a case of supporting upskilling, because I think in the past employers might have been a little bit nervous about, you know, training their employees in case they leave. But now it's very much a case of, you know, training them so they'll stay and they'll develop and they'll contribute to your organization. So upskilling is critical. And like, we're just one of 70 SkillNet business networks throughout the country. We're obviously focused on the polymer sector, but there's lots of other networks within various sectors and regions throughout Ireland, supported by SkillNet Ireland funding, doing a great job in upskilling the Irish workforce.
And I suppose that the idea of manufacturing, I mean, it would have been considered grunt work. You're stuck on a line and you're doing the same boring, repetitive thing over and over again, and you mightn't necessarily be well paid for that. I mean, that's the traditional manufacturing job in people's minds. But it's completely different when you walk into these sites, because A, they're quite well paid, B, they're quite skilled, and C, they want to learn. So it's tapping into an audience that really can see great opportunity for the rest of their career, if not with that company, perhaps with another, but definitely within that area.
Absolutely. And like you say, there would be a perception of manufacturing working on a line, whereas, you know, automation has really, you know, taken over in terms of manufacturing. So you'll have a lot of roles now where adding value, you're problem solving, you're troubleshooting processes, you're working on materials and design. You're not, you know, on an assembly line essentially in most areas, because automation really has taken over there. So that's kind of increased the skills that are required in terms of not just being able to manufacture a polymer product in terms of polymer processing, but also having the automation skills to be able to manage the robots and work the automation cells and be able to troubleshoot those as well. So there's a huge amount of automation across all manufacturing now. So it's taken a lot of the boring work out of it, if you like, and it led to higher value, more interesting jobs within manufacturing for people to work.
Okay, well, how can people get in contact with you in SkillNet if they're looking to maybe get someone in to talk to their workforce, or indeed if they're interested themselves in upskilling?
Well, I mean, SkillNet Ireland website will be the first port of call, so skillnetireland.com, to look at all of the networks. It's that we're just one of 70, and obviously our website is firstpolymerskillnet.com. But if you are in a different sector or you're in a specific region, there are 70 networks throughout the country to support you. And then SkillNet Ireland themselves have a lot of national initiatives around Climate Ready Academy and the Innovation Exchange. There's lots of opportunities within SkillNets to, you know, support your business in terms of talent development and just keeping up to date with the latest technologies and developments in industry.
Catherine Collins, pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for this episode of Red Business. Thank you so much for listening. Fiona Corcoran was our producer this week. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus, our video series with thanks to Cork's local enterprise offices, is up right now on the website redfm.ie. And we will catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts.